Hey, good evening, Truth Seekers. Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. Thanks for tuning in tonight. The firing of Imus, of course, by CBS Radio has unleashed a whole avalanche of weirdness, utter weirdness. What a day for Kurt Vonnegut to die, right? Although he died last night, but just an avalanche of stupefying weirdness. I don't know. I'm not even going to get into it tonight. I really am not, except one email and just one comment. This email is from Jen, who writes, "Hey, Mike, I've been watching the Imus thing unfold while I've worked a triple shift up to 24 hours. I've only had 5 hours of sleep, but some questions and thoughts have been forming in my mind. Isn't it amazing how a double standard has popped up in the world of media? I'm not talking about the traditional double standards of male, female, or even race, which are there and are still a huge problem, but I'm talking about the double standards that seem to come into play when talking about conservative and non-conservative personalities. Please note I'm not praising Don Imus or condemning him in this babbling. I'm just making an observation. Why is the outrage and punishment there for Don Imus, but not for other media personalities who in the past have said something just as bad as Imus or worse? It has been on the record that Limbaugh in recent months has referred to Senator Obama and Ms. Halle Berry as being African Americans. This is just the latest outrage of his use of the English language. Glenn Beck referred to individuals stuck in various places in New Orleans and Mississippi as scumbags. In my local area of talk, a couple of talk show hosts, when speaking on air about the events of Katrina, during the middle of all the mayhem of the Superdome, one of them said, quote, forget National Guard, just shoot them all and let their bodies float, end quote. What sets these individuals apart from, say, a Don Imus or anyone in the media who might be labeled as progressive or liberal or left-leaning at the very least, non-conservative? Why do we not see media outrage and sponsors dropping those individuals above? Why do we have this double standard? Could it be the fact that the media will always, and despite certain conservative media host belief, will always have a conservative or right-leaning bias? And could it be that products and corporations will be run by conservatives who basically applaud the conservative media person?" There's a couple more lines here. Thanks, Jen. Well, you left off, of course, one of the worst is Neil Bortz, who's made a career out of dumping on welfare recipients and black people because they, you know, they just ignore him or don't listen to his program, don't realize what he's saying. But Bortz's position, I mentioned this in the mini blog the other day, Bortz's whole reason for being in existence is to assure white people that they are, in fact, superior to people of color. On a March 31st, 2006 broadcast of his nationally syndicated program, Bortz said that Representative Cynthia McKinney, quote, looks like a ghetto slut, end quote. Bortz was commenting on the incident on March 29th in which McKinney allegedly struck a police officer on Capitol Hill at a security checkpoint. Bortz said that McKinney's new hairdo makes her look, quote, like a ghetto slut, like an explosion at a Brillo pad factory, like Tina Turner peeing on an electric fence, like a Shih Tzu. McKinney, of course, is the first African-American woman ever elected to Congress from Georgia. But that doesn't matter to Bortz. Bortz doesn't care, not unless you're a white male. On October 24, 2005 broadcast of his program, Bortz suggested that a victim of Hurricane Katrina, then housed in an Atlanta hotel, consider prostitution. Bortz said, quote, if that's the only way she can take care of herself, it sure beats the hell out of sucking off the taxpayers, end quote. This woman was featured in an October 23rd Atlanta Journal-Constitution article about what she was suffering through, and Bortz repeated her name on the air. Glenn Beck, but Glenn Beck is another one. Glenn Beck is a pig. I don't know what CNN Headlines was doing hiring this miscreant, but you know, this stuff is just all just puked out all over media, hasn't it? I'm just content to sit back and watch it happen. There are a lot of people who are involved in talk radio and talk television that I think are just utter, absolute pigs. It's one thing to challenge and insult and attack people in positions of power. It's one thing to scream bloody murder about fascists that are taking over our country, or Republicans who are destroying our military, but it's something else again to go after people simply because of their color or their ethnicity to hell with it. This is America 2007. Either you go with the flow or you collapse into a puddle. I still believe that while Imus should have been fired years ago, I could never figure out why I wasn't. I watched his program the last couple, 3 months. And I guess I watched it when he wasn't making, slimy comments about people unable or unwilling or didn't care about defending themselves. You know, the white boy jokes. I said before, I liked listening to his guests on the phone, the newsmakers who were kind of unplugged on the Imus program, where it seemed like you get more of a straight answer, and the music. As far as Imus and his crew of troglodytes, to me, they were just a bunch of slap-happy freaks, overgrown white boys who just couldn't get it together, who were paid an enormous amount of money to be crude and insulting and kind of locker room-ish toilet humor. Not the kind of white males you'd like your kids to hang out with, or, God forbid, one of your daughters to marry. But I, again, with zeroing in on Imus just seems to me to be kind of laughable in one sense, without defending anything that he said, but just laughable, because here you have the pig man who's been doing this for 15 years. The pig man is more subtle. Usually Bortz is too. The ghetto whore thing that Bortz said about Cynthia McKinney, notwithstanding, Bortz and is like Limbaugh. They're experts at being slimy and slick and slithery, whereas the amateurs like Beck or Hannity or Imus are not slick and slimy and slithery. They just come out and say it and then stand there wondering, with their eyes wide open, like, what'd I do? Did I say something wrong? What about those black rap stars? And they can't make, they just don't understand the difference between, and again, not defending rappers or the hip-hop culture. That's not my culture. That's not my music. It's way over there. Occasionally, I may listen to a bit of it. I guess like my parents occasionally would dip their toe into rock and roll, Jerry Lee Lewis or the early rock and rollers. But hip-hop is just, it's just not my thing. It just isn't. And for Imus to come across like he's all of a sudden picked up on hip hop culture using kind of some of the vernacular, like, give back. You don't belong there. You don't go there. So making the analogy or the comparison, what about these black rappers, which I believe Bortz did and a lot of the white boys are doing now, that's the scream. If black culture wants to clean up their music, it's up to black culture to clean up their music or their poetry. It's not up to white people. I'm sorry, that's just the way it is. Any more than it's up to me to tell the Irish that they have no business writing poetry that is anti-British. It's their gig. It's their struggle. The arrogance that comes from people in one culture telling people in another culture, you can't do this. That's why we're in Iraq. By extension, I know it's a huge step from Don Imus and Neil Bortz to the war in Iraq, but it's there. We're going to go over there and tell them that their system of government is no good. We're going to bring them democracy, and I'll be a son of a bitch. We'll kill every one of them in order to do it, if they don't kill themselves. It's sick. It's crazy. I don't like it. And frankly, there's a part of me that just doesn't care. You know what I'm saying? I don't mean to sound like a hard ass for people who are being insulted by these right-wing vermin, but there is a part of me that just doesn't care. I figure people can take care of themselves. You know what I'm saying? We'll be right back.
turn down your speakers, it'll be our secret.
Past the hour. From the weird angle of the news, before we get into the murder and mayhem for tonight, World Bank President Paul Wolfowitz, we mentioned this last week, he's been promoting his girlfriend through the World Bank. He confessed. What are we in? Some kind of a mea culpa period, I guess. He confessed to errors over a pay scandal surrounding his girlfriend. And he said, as far as continuing with the World Bank, he'll leave that up to the Board of Governors, the governors of the World Bank. He refused to say if he might resign as the bank executive board investigates this little controversy that Wolfowitz has stirred up. He told a news conference that, quote, "I made a mistake for which I am sorry," end quote. And his mistake was putting his girlfriend, Shahariza, a Libyan-born partner, it says here, into a job that pays $200,000 a year, and nobody's real sure what she does. According to a Financial Times report today, Wolfowitz personally ordered massive, that's their word, massive pay raises given to Riza when she was sent from the World Bank's communications office to serve out an assignment at the U.S. State Department. What makes this so fun to me, this scandal, is Wolfowitz has just begun a campaign where he's asking the World Bank to investigate itself for corruption. He's charging that there's all kinds of corruption in the 185 member World Bank's multi-billion-dollar lending schemes. So he's asked for an investigation into corruption and fraud and payoffs and everything. While he's got his girlfriend on the payroll and keeps getting her these pay raises. Incidentally, he's also under fire from veteran staffers of the World Bank for his management style. Following a series of clashes with the board of the World Bank, they are pissed off because he keeps appointing, according to Financial Times, he keeps appointing Republican Party allies to key bank posts. It doesn't make any difference if they have any experience. He keeps giving them these pork chop kind of jobs where they just sit back and draw their pay. This is like the mob when they own the unions in, say, New Jersey. And oh my God, sounds like a Tony Soprano plot line. And no matter what the job was, there'd be five or six guys, right, sitting outside of a trailer, drinking beer and playing cards all day while the workers worked, and those guys were on the payroll. Well, that's what Wolfowitz is doing. It's the same thing. Anyway, back to his girlfriend. He didn't spell out his exact role in determining her pay deal, but he said, quote, "In hindsight, I wish I had trusted my original instincts and kept myself out of the negotiations," end quote. Oh, kiss my grits. What do you mean in hindsight you wish your original instincts to keep yourself out? Your original instincts was to get her $500,000, but you could only get $200,000. Give me a break. He explained that he had followed advice given by the bank's ethics committee. Yeah, they told him, well, maybe it is okay. You are the president. He said, quote, "I take full responsibility for the details of the agreement." Oh, you ugly old man, you. Oh, my God. Well, I brought it up the other night. Can you imagine kissing that man? What's her name? Riva. What's her name? Shahariza. Oh, God. $200,000, huh? You what? You need more than that to kiss Wolfowitz?
I would need a lot more than that. I need some serious bling.
Kurt Vonnegut is dead. He was 84. His wife, the author and photographer Jill Kremens, reported his death, said he had been hospitalized after suffering irreversible brain injuries as a result of a fall several weeks ago. A little bit more about Vonnegut. I could no more talk about Vonnegut in a three-hour program than Fly to the Moon. We'll be back. Stay with us.
Time to snuggle up with your favorite screamer, more Mike Malloy.
It's about 26 before the hour. The death of Kurt Vonnegut, I don't know if it affected you. It doesn't affect me in a personal sense because I'm not his family. But certainly in some sense it does. The novel, I haven't read all of his novels. I think he wrote 14, but I'll tell you what, Slaughterhouse-Five and Cat's Cradle.
Galapagos.
Yeah.
That was one of my favorites.
Yeah.
Bluebeard.
They were certainly unique, kind of like Mark Twain on acid, but alternative universes is the way the Times put it. It's what he wrote about, with the topsy-turvy images populated by races of his own creation, invented phenomenon as well as weird religions. But Slaughterhouse-Five, to me, was the book of or the novel of all that he wrote that just burned into my head. And then when I had a chance to see the movie, it was as though that was exactly what I imagined when I read the book. As the Times points out, and just hang with me a second on this, if you don't mind, the defining moment of Vonnegut's life was the firebombing of Dresden, Germany, which, of course, was in the movie Slaughterhouse-Five. That's mostly what it was about. The firebombing by Allied forces in 1945, an event he witnessed firsthand as a young prisoner of war. Tens of thousands of civilians were killed in those raids, many of them burned to death or asphyxiated. And Vonnegut wrote, quote, "The firebombing of Dresden was a work of art." He added, quote, "A tower of smoke and flame to commemorate the rage and heartbreak of so many who had had their lives warped or ruined by the indescribable greed and vanity and cruelty of Germany," end quote. That's a pretty breathtaking sentence when you get right down to it. To Vonnegut, the only possible redemption for the madness and apparent meaninglessness of existence was human kindness. And the title character in his novel back in the 60s, God Bless You, Mr. Rosewater, or Pearls Before Swine, summed up that philosophy. And it goes like this, quote, "Hello, babies. Welcome to Earth. It's hot in the summer and cold in the winter. It's round and wet and crowded. At the outside, babies, you've got about 100 years here. There's only one rule that I know of, babies. God damn it, you've got to be kind." End quote. And the last thing I want to throw into the program tonight about Kurt Vonnegut, this is from this is Requiem from A Man Without a Country, which was his last novel. I haven't read. came out about 2 years ago. It's very short, titled Requiem. The crucified planet Earth, should it find a voice and a sense of irony, might now well say of our abuse of it, "Forgive them, Father, they know not what they do." The irony would be that we know what we are doing. When the last living thing has died on account of us, how poetical it would be if Earth could say, in a voice floating up perhaps from the floor of the Grand Canyon, "It is done. People did not like it here." Aye. So it's off to the used bookstore for me this weekend. Well, not this weekend. I'll be in Phoenix. Double your pleasure, double your speed, and a double think. Dana on the program tonight. Too much cappuccino Perino. You should have heard her today. As a matter of fact, you will hear a bit of her from today. It's like, you know, Perino trying to get her mouth ahead of her spin on, you know, the latest twist to Attorneygate, the missing email sent from allegedly non-archived servers. Oh, my God. Thousands, tens of thousands. Somebody estimated up to 3 million emails missing. Gotta love this one. The Justice Department claims the right to peek into your email. But, of course, their email is private, the better to hide their crimes. But I thought they were all innocent. If you've got nothing to hide, why all the hard drives scrubbing? And we'll also discuss Bush's latest progress in Iraq. Oh, my God. That was a hideous thing to wake up to this morning. In the heart of the green zone, in the middle of Bush's so-called nascent democracy, in the parliament building, a bomb. A suicide bomber. How did he get through, assuming it was a he, the U.S. military, or as they so poetically put it, coalition defense perimeter, the private contractor defense perimeter, all the checkpoints, and of course the Iraqi defense perimeter and checkpoints. Somehow, some way, a suicide bomber, 8 dead, 20 wounded. Of the dead, 3 members of the Iraqi parliament. Of the 20 wounded, I think 8 members of the Iraqi parliament. It's just incredible. Is there any doubt? You know, John McCain and Michael Pence from Indiana and George Bush and Dick Cheney and Gates and all these people can go straight to hell. They're insane, every single one of them, especially on this issue. Is there any doubt any longer, and if so, who has it, that the so-called insurgents, the people who want us out of Iraq, can strike anywhere they choose, any time they choose? And as far as John McCain is concerned, I just wonder, what did he think this morning when he turned on CNN and saw the same thing you and I saw? So I have a bit of that, too. Now, Sharon sent this to me, too. United States Air Force officers involved in a road rage incident with a Blackwater USA contractor in Afghanistan. 2 United States Air Force officers have been slapped with administrative sanctions. The discipline was handed out by the same military judge, a general who dismissed criminal charges, were also filed against 2 Lieutenant Colonels, Gary Brown and Christopher Hall. Gary Brown's attorney, civilian attorney, has fired back at the sanctions with an angry letter calling the sanctions a laugh-out-loud joke and suggesting that the general bowed to pressure from Blackwater, the private military company based in Moyock, North Carolina. And as reported by the Virginia, it's a Virginia Pilot, one of the newspapers on the coast down there. In the latest turn of events, in an escalating clash. Now listen. An escalating clash between uniformed military personnel and private contractors on the battlefield. That's what this is. In a letter of reprimand, Lieutenant General Gary North, commander of the 9th Air Force, wrote that Lieutenant Colonel Gary Brown acted with, quote, unreasonable force and intimidation in a confrontation with the Blackwater contractor after their vehicles collided on a street in Kabul back in September. General North wrote specifically, while in uniform, you, Lieutenant Colonel Brown, shoved, kicked, and pointed your loaded M4 rifle at and threatened the life of Mr. Jimmy Bergeron, a U.S. civilian contractor employee who did not pose a reasonable threat to you or others. I find your conduct reckless, undisciplined, and a discredit to the armed forces, end quote. Now think about that for a second. This guy Bergeron was working in Afghanistan under a Blackwater USA drug interdiction training contract with the U.S. Drug Enforcement Administration. Sound familiar? Doesn't this crap go on in this country all the time? At a hearing in February, Colonel Brown and Colonel Hall testified that this Bergeron behaved aggressively and that they feared he was a suicide bomber. You see, this is a war zone in Afghanistan. And we have these civilian cowboys running around trying to interdict drug shipments. And two lieutenant colonels come in contact with this freak. They should have filled him full of lead and figured out who the hell he was later. But they didn't. The investigating officer who heard the two lieutenant colonels' testimony concluded that they had properly followed the rules of engagement. And the recommendation before it ever went to the military court was that the charges be dropped. In a letter to General North yesterday, one of Lieutenant Colonel Brown's civilian attorneys wrote that the reprimand flies in the face of the investigator's officer's findings and, quote, demonstrates your lack of moral courage to admit error and do the right thing. Apologize to these two officers who were needlessly and without reason subjected to personal humiliation and torment. And as a result of the reprimand, this guy Gittins, the civilian lawyer, wrote, now other military personnel will be wondering what will happen to them when they find themselves in a similar circumstance. Perhaps one or more of them will hesitate and lose their lives because of the hesitation your decision will have engendered. If so, you will have killed them as surely as if you pointed a weapon at them and pulled the trigger. So, in Afghanistan and Iraq, we have these freak-ass Blackwater types running around, fully armed, answerable to nobody, and now they are getting in the way of the U.S. military. Some of you may say, well, Mike, that's a good thing. I say, it sucks.
Bring your daughters around to the bar, 'cause we're the cops of the world, boys. We're the cops of...
Much poppy cultivation in Afghanistan. Got to work together to eradicate poppy. The country is quite famous for growing pomegranates.
Yes.
Or honeydew melons.
Yeah. Keep going, keep going. Get up to the line. Keep going, keep going. All right, one last thing, a little P.S. to this Blackwater two Air Force, United States Air Force officers dust-up. In his letter to the sentencing judge, the civilian attorney, Mr. Gittins, said, the general appears unconcerned that attempts were made to frame Lieutenant Colonel Gary Brown. The civilian attorney said, he referred to the investigating officer's report that Afghan security guards who witnessed the confrontation said they were offered bribes to give false testimony about it. Gittins, the civilian attorney, blames Blackwater for the alleged witness tampering. Blackwater says the allegation involves someone else trying to pin blame on Bergeron. The Air Force says it's investigating the allegation. But do you see what's going on here? You know that this is not the only case of this. And you also know that rightly or wrongly, and I don't believe we belong in Iraq at all, and I don't believe the United States military belongs in Afghanistan. That should have been a police action to track down the people, if you believe the official story, who organized the attack on this country. But our military is there. And this was not a combat situation. These are people driving on the street. And all of a sudden, you have three highly trained people confront each other, all three Americans. One working for a private contractor, two working for the United States military. And the two working for the United States military gets a reprimand. Now, I'm the first to go after verbally on this program members of the United States military who commit these atrocious acts against civilians or even against each other. But this is an outrage. This is insane. It's more insane than it is an outrage. Of course, a war zone is always insane, I've been told. But to have a private contractor, oh, God. All right, well. Two bombs, it says here, struck at the heart of Iraq. A suicide bomb exploded in the Iraqi parliament, and a powerful truck bomb destroyed a 60-year-old steel bridge over the bank, over the Tigris River. The bomb in parliament killed 8 people, including 3 members of parliament, injured 23. Witnesses said the attacks represented... Well, actually, the deputy prime minister of Iraq said the attack represented a major breach in security. Oh, really? In the international zone, the green zone, which has multiple layers of security manned by a combination of Iraqi forces, foreign contractors, and American soldiers. You got to wonder about those foreign contractors, don't you? If they're American contractors who are nominally insane, suffering from their own brand of PTSD, from their own time in combat, and they come back in to say, oh, I don't know, Blackwater, and you got to wonder about their drug and alcohol habits, or is there a chance maybe money is paid to look the other way? For just a brief moment, I'm bringing my girlfriend in. And it turns out not to be a girlfriend, but a suicide bomber, huh? This was the worst bombing to take place in the Green Zone since the American troops arrived there 4 years ago. And the Times or the Associated Press or whoever it is says, since the bombing occurred within the Green Zone, it appeared also meant to show that even the American military cannot protect Iraqis despite the number of troops. And despite the effort being put into the new Baghdad security plan, made me a believer. Absolutely made me a believer. Huh? In right inside the parliament building, which is inside the green zone, which is surrounded by as much security as you will find anywhere in any combat zone probably ever in the history of American warfare. And these people just go right into the heart of it and blow it up. And John McCain and George Bush and Gates and the rest of these people are saying, no, we're winning. News media not reporting the good stuff. Man. All right, Suzanne in L.A. wants me to pass this on. DraftGore.com is now at 69,945. Only 55 more needed for a nice round 70 grand. I think Suzanne has a thing for round numbers. So it might be good to do this. I don't want to see Suzanne lose it and run into the streets of L.A. screaming, it's not at 70,000. So if you're in the listening area here, which is the entire world via the internet, please go sign the petition. Suzanne is one of our 9 listeners in L.A. And there's a link on our website if you want to go to MikeMalloy.com or to go to DraftGorgat.com. But, you know, Suzanne is one of our 9 Los Angeles, California, USA listeners, and I don't want to lose her. I really don't. So please get it up to 70 grand before something untoward happens. All right, when we come back, we've got too much cappuccino perino for you. You are not going to believe this. The whole story is just more of the same old, same old. The White House is declaring that, oops, oops, seems like we lost 3 million emails. Oops, sorry. You don't lose emails. They can be scrubbed off your hard drive or out of your memory or off your computer or however that stuff works. But you don't lose them. There is no such thing as losing an email. It doesn't get lost. It always has a destination, either intended or unintended. And since it has a destination, it always goes there. Always. Now, if you want to get rid of it, I guess you can. But you have to consciously shoot it, stomp it, kill it, cut it into a million pieces, and get rid of it. Otherwise, it's going to be there, wherever there is, forever. Welcome back. 6:30 past the hour. Hey, don't forget this Sunday, 4 o'clock in Scottsdale, the Nova M first birthday bash at Axis Radius. It's a pretty cool looking venue, by the way. There's a link to it at MikeMalloy.com. I've only passed through Phoenix and long time ago, but I'm looking forward to this. Bill Press is going to be there, Stephanie Miller, Jeff Farias, Tom Hartman, Ian, the producer of this, or the associate producer and engineer of this program will be there. Billy, who is the, what is Billy, chief information officer of this?
I like to call him the Nova M. Czar.
The Nova M. Czar?
We need a czar. Everybody has to have a czar these days. So.
And I think Shelley and Anita Drobny will be there, too, the ones who started Air America and the ones who started Nova M. So there'll be some folks for you to meet and hang out with. And what's it going to be? Entertainment. That's live music. Drinks. I like that part. Birthday cake. So come on by. If you haven't got your tickets yet, you better hurry up. Don't count on getting them at the door. Really, there are fire codes in these buildings. And, you know, once they hit, what is it, 1,000 people? Is that the capacity? Maybe a little bit more than that. Once they hit that, that's it. They shut the doors. If you want to get your tickets over the phone, you can go to, there's an information link at MikeMalloy.com in the middle of my homepage, or NovaMRadio.com, or you can call them at 602-257-1351. But be there or be square. I'm serious. Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington. Its acronym is CREW. Released a report today entitled Without a Trace. The Missing White House Emails and Violations of the Presidential Records Act, the PRA. And this report, you can go there. It's what's their website? I've got it right here. Don't go away. It's right here. It's right here. Their website is citizensforethics.org. Citizensforethics.org. And they detail the legal issues behind the story of the White House email scandal, right? They are saying that as many as 5 million emails have been dumped in the past 2 years by this criminal element that has taken over the country. Melanie Sloan, executive director of CREW, said today it's clear that the White House has been willfully violating the law. The only question now is to what extent. The ever-changing excuses offered by this administration that they didn't want to violate the Hatch Act, that staff wasn't clear on the law, are patently ridiculous. Very convenient that embarrassing and potentially incriminating emails have gone missing. It's the Nixon White House all over again. Well, the Presidential Records Act, if you don't remember, because I've heard of it, it was enacted in 1978. It requires the President of the United States to preserve all presidential records, which are defined as those records relating to, quote, the activities, deliberations, decisions, and policies that reflect the performance of the president's constitutional, statutory, or other official or ceremonial duties, end quote. Now, the Clinton administration policy was, back in 1993, then Assistant to the President and Staff Secretary John Podesta sent a memo to all presidential staff explaining that the PRA, Presidential Records Act, required all staff members to maintain all records, including emails. Podesta stated that the use of external email networks was prohibited because records could not be saved as required. The 1997 White House manual and a 2000 memo issued by Mark Lindsay, then assistant to the president, echoed the policy, requiring staff to use only the White House email system for official communications in order to be in compliance with the law. Bush administration policy. Well, the Bush administration has refused to make public its record-keeping policy. A confidential source provided Crewe with a 2002 document indicating the use of non-EOP, Executive Office of the President, or whatever. What does that mean, EOP? I guess that's what it means. Messaging, enabling mechanisms. A confidential source provided Crewe with a 2002 document indicating the use of non-White House messaging-enabled mechanisms. They should not be used for official business. The Bush administration practice, though, in the wake of the scandal surrounding Abramoff and the fired U.S. attorneys, emails were released showing that top White House staffers routinely used Republican National Committee email accounts to conduct official business. Now, why do you suppose they did that? Well, it goes on and on. Just go to Crewe's website and check this out. I mean, this is just astonishing. I and other liberals have made references to the Nazi-like attitude of Bush. Where it concerns invading other countries, that's true. But where it concerns domestic policies, this is pure Soviet Union. In the bad old days. This is pure Gorbachev. This is pure Jesus. Who are some of those old dictators? Khrushchev. That's what I'm trying to say. Yeltsin. The idea that government was a huge secret. You know, that's why the people in the old Soviet Union, with the fall of the Soviet Empire, and all of a sudden they were told, okay, you're free, couldn't do anything because for three generations they had been locked into nothing but lies. This is what the Bush crime family is. Exactly the same thing. Here's what Pat, you got that sound on Pat Leahy. This is Pat Leahy today talking about the document dump or the missed documents or what have you.
You know, accountability has been lacking in this administration because there's been a rubber stamp Congress. Loyalty to the president has been rewarded over all else. And that lack of accountability and lack of the checks and balances that fostered it must end. I hope it has ended. We do not need another commendation for the heck of a job done by those who fail in their essential duties to the American people. True accountability means being forthcoming. And now we're learning that off-book communications are being used by these people in the White House by using Republican political email addresses, and they say they have not been preserved. I don't believe that. I don't believe that. You can't erase emails. Not today. They've gone through too many servers. They can't say they've been lost. That's like saying the dog ate my homework. It doesn't work that way. Those emails are there. They just don't want to produce them.
Yeah, really?
It's like the famous 18-minute gap in the Nixon White House tapes.
Right.
They say they've been erased or misplaced. They're there. They're there. They know they're there. And we'll subpoena them if necessary.
Yeah.
And we'll have them.
Yes.
Because now when they suddenly are facing meaningful oversight. They say they can't produce the information.
Yeah.
They have the information.
Yeah.
They have to bring it out and show it to the American people.
You're damn right.
The administration has worn out the benefit of the doubt. They've undermined whatever credibility they had left.
I guess that's all of it. God. The White House said today it might be missing emails. Scott Stanzel, the Deputy White House Press Secretary, told reporters this morning when asked if some of the missing emails included those related to the dismissals of the eight United States attorneys. Scott Stanzel said, "Well, it can't be ruled out." Oh, these sons of bitches. Oh, God. Of the 1,000 White House officials who are political appointees, 22, including Karl Rove, the chief political strategist, have Republican National Committee accounts that are supposed to be used only for campaign-related work. But recent revelations that some officials have used those accounts for Bush administration business, including discussions of plans to dismiss United States attorneys and God knows what else, has prompted a congressional investigation.
Can't you just hear them all sitting around going, what the hell are we going to do with all this stock? Well, let's just lose it.
Let's lose it. Well, how do we do that? Well, I have a friend who... All right, too much cappuccino Perino when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
The corporation, their minutes, notes, and memos can't be shared. And by the way, does anybody know the current whereabouts of Kenneth Lee? Oh, it's national security, of the public scrutiny, policy of legal coup d'etat. Ah, we have a shadow government. Imagine that.
Laura Pigglesbush. When Georgie falls asleep, I creep into the Oval Office, sneak a ciggy, and turn on Mike Malloy. Then I reprogram Georgie's speed dial. The simple pleasures.
Twenty-one past the hour. All right, regarding the emails, Bruce in New Jersey writes, Mike, I've worked on government PCs, and I can tell you for a fact the information can be retrieved from hard drives using simple software tools. The National Security Agency can retrieve information from the hard disk by breaking open the hard drive and scanning the actual plates with some kind of super microscope. Note, when you hit the delete key on your PC, nothing is deleted. It is merely marked as an available sector to write data to. You can write, erase the same sector up to 7 times before standard software retrieval is ineffective. The National Security Administration's capabilities are unknown. Keep this in mind when selling your old PC. Really? All right, ladies and gentlemen, too much cappuccino Perino at the briefing today. Attorney Gate has spawned email gate, which we can hope spawns impeachment gate at the White House and the Justice Department as the search for the missing email from private political accounts begins. Rah! We're looking everywhere. Obviously, Spinderella here has her work cut out for her, but I got to ask, what is an email universe? What is that? Is it some new Windows product they're promoting at the mall? Is that where she picks that up? Reporter says to the Neutron Blonde, Dana, is there any concern that the loss of White House emails through outside email providers might involve a violation of law? Isn't it a given that some were lost?
And well, I think that the we don't have an idea on the universe of the number of emails that were lost. I went through the small slice of the universe of the emails that could potentially have been there. We were talking about a very small universe of emails, but truly, we just don't know enough yet, and we will continue to update you as the review goes on and as we continue to talk with the RNC General Counsel's Office to understand how those emails were archived. Or not.
Or not. Oh, please. You mean to tell me there's no hard drive email record somewhere? If the Justice Department wanted to read my email, I'm sure it would take them about, oh, I don't know, that quick to nab it. Even if I had double, triple, quintuple deleted them or whatever. Give me a break. If they're lost, it's only because Karl Rove and Dick Cheney want them lost. Next reporter asked Buffy, the truth slayer, about Leahy's statement that simply losing email doesn't pass the smell test because they have to exist somewhere on a computer. If they've been that scrubbed, then obviously the emailer had something to hide. Reporter says, Dana, this lost email problem comes at a time when the Senate Judiciary Committee is already a little bit put out in terms of negotiating with the White House. And Senator Leahy said today, I don't know if it's more the dog ate my homework or if we're back to the Rosemary Woods 18-minute gap. Senator Leahy, Dana, seems to be suggesting now that this is a credibility issue, that the explanations coming out of the White House don't pass some sort of sniff test for him.
I don't know how he could possibly say that when what we have done is endeavored to be very forthcoming and honest and talking about our policy that we've had. Now, it would be different if we hadn't said anything at all, but we didn't. We have come forward. And to tell you that, you know, I don't have all the answers right now, that there is a review that's ongoing, that we're going to keep you updated. We are trying to understand, to the best of our ability, the universe of the emails that were potentially lost. We have come forward.
This is so not radical. Can I leave now? I've answered the universe question like to the max now, and the sweater is itchy, like it's totally grody. Oh my God! All right. So you're asking me questions about universes, and I'm getting all confused here, and I'm getting dizzy. I don't know anything about these damn emails. Did I say damn? Oh, I didn't mean to say damn. Now, legally, Bland tries to explain away the so-called double delete practice going on in Rove's office. Again, if you've got nothing to hide, the reporter says, but let's take this idea, Dana, that perhaps emails could have disappeared, when I think the first thing anybody learns taking a job in America today is that emails never disappear from a workplace computer. On this double delete issue, I'm trying to understand, with the double delete, can that override the archiving?
I'm not a technical expert, and I can't speak to any individual's personal email habits. We're trying to when I say that we're trying to find if there were any potential emails that were not captured in that system, if someone had the capability to, if they wanted to clean out their inbox, delete a message, and then when your deleted box fills up and you decide that you want to clean that up, if you delete that one as well, where did those emails go? And that's exactly what we're trying to find out.
They went to email heaven. The email universe. And nobody in this government can tell you, not the CIA or the FBI or the NSA or anybody. Can you grab a 14-year-old in the video game section of Target and ask him? I bet he could do it, Dana. No wonder Leahy said this smells funny. It's out there in the universe, an email universe. I don't know where it is.
I don't email, however, and there's a reason. I don't want you reading my personal stuff.
Okay, 26 before the hour. Back to too much cappuccino perino. We only have a couple more here. I really like playing her emails. She just, I don't know, she just, I don't mean her emails. I mean her, these sound bites that Kathy puts together. She just makes me happy. I know she's a liar and part of the Bush crime family, an ardent member of the Bush crime family. It's my understanding she just hates Democrats. But there's something about the lilt of her voice that just, I don't know, it just, you got to love how she like totally slips into a combination here of Valley Girl and Newspeak when discussing email technology. You got to hear this. Reporter begins. Dana, what does the president know about this?
The president, when he heard about it, said that he wanted to make sure that it was getting fixed. That is one of the reasons that we have a new policy.
So you got this new policy, and what you're going into the seventh year of this administration. Why did it take so long to enact this policy?
Well, we did. I will admit it. We screwed up, and we're trying to fix it. Remember, this is before BlackBerries ever existed. Most people in the White House did not get BlackBerries until well after September 11th. And that communication has now become ubiquitous. I know you all use it, and we do too. And so now you're on 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and it seems that you don't ever have a break. And so technology really moved quickly, and the policy should have evolved with it.
You know, like you use your BlackBerry like 24 hours a day and you never have a break. Like, oh, my God, I can never get through a highlighting session without it ringing. And then I got to answer because, you know, like my guy is like totally jealous and stuff. He is so not tubular. And if I didn't answer, then later he'd be all like, well, where were you when I called? And I'd be like, oh, my God, can I get my hair done without you going postal on me? I mean, gag me with a restraining order already. So, like, I got to answer it. And so I mess up all my foils and my hair just ain't bitching.
There's something about the lilt to her voice. It just, I don't know, it takes me back to an easier time. Last one from Speedy Perino before she had to motor to the mall. Reporter says, Dana, Senator Leahy said this morning, quote, they say they have been preserved. They haven't been preserved, the emails. I don't believe that. You don't erase emails today. They've gone through too many servers. These emails are there. They just don't want to produce them, end quote. Well, Dana, what does it say about the lack of credibility that the administration has that he would say something like that?
It's troubling. I mean, I don't know if Senator Leahy is also an IT expert, but I can assure you that we are working very hard to make sure that we find the emails that were potentially lost and that we are responsive to the requests. If there are responses that are need providing on the U.S. Attorney's matter. We're being very honest and forthcoming. And so I hope that he would understand the spirit in which we have come forward and try to explain how we screwed up our policy and how we're working to fix it.
Like as if.
Holding in the FBI.
Let me check in terms of like the forensics. That's one of my areas of, I don't have a clue. You can ask me about global warming, I'll know, but IT forensics is not my strong point, but we'll work to get back to you.
IT forensics is not my strong point.
I am so totally clueless on that. I mean, you know, like if you ask me about something else, I don't know. I know it, like the new time you choose I'm wearing or something like that. But, you know, I just don't know anything about IT technology today.
Global warming? You can ask me about that? That's like that new club in DuPont Circle, right? The one with all the banana trees and coconuts on the deck. Isn't that called global warming? No, you're talking about something else. Boop. Oh, my God. Gag me with the hard drive. Oops, be careful there. Well, I'm worn out. I'm just exhausted. We've only been in here an hour and a half, and I'm just worn out. There's something about Dana Perino that just... I love this story. It came in yesterday. Oil field services provider Halliburton, which announced in 2005 it would accept no new contracts in Iran but would honor existing agreements, said Monday it has completed all contractual commitments and is no longer going to be in Iran. Get your friends out before you nuke them, right? I thought there was some laws against doing... Oh, that's right. This is Cheney's company. Never mind. So Halliburton is pulled out of, so they say... What else do we got here? Like, I don't know about the email. Oh, my God, you get started on that. You can't stop. I'll tell you what. When in doubt, go to the phone calls. And the phone number here is 800-989-1480. Oh, my God, look at this. People have been holding. Oh, I'm so sorry. All right, let's start with Shorty. Shorty in Los Angeles, you're one of our eight listeners out there, right?
Hey, how you doing?
I don't know.
You had me cracking up on the universe thing.
Say it again?
You had me cracking up when she was saying universe.
She's driving me crazy.
I don't know. Did NASA launch something?
Say it again?
Did NASA launch something?
I don't know. I don't know if she's talking about... I have no idea. It's just like she learned a new word.
The email universe?
Yes.
I don't know.
Yeah.
You have me cracking up. Okay. How are you?
I'm fine.
Have you heard about the mayor of Houston?
The mayor of Houston?
Yeah. People in Houston should be...
No, I haven't heard about the mayor of Houston.
Well, I have on my Muhammad Ali boots, and I'm doing my dance.
What's going on?
He said some very offensive stuff, you know, which put me on offense. That's, you know, and I'm...
Well, when did he say this?
Today.
Today?
And I had a friend of mine's daughter crying. It's all...
Can you repeat it?
She's on her way to Iraq, and she is an Indian. It's on Indian Airwaves Radio.
Indian as South Asian?
In Native American.
Native American? All right,
yeah.
What do you say, or can't you say it on the show?
Well, he's worse than Imus.
Oh, never mind.
Yeah, and so everybody who's listening in Houston, call your governor. Everybody.
Well, I haven't heard about this. Is it out on the wire services?
Yeah,
yet?
They have a radio show. You know, like if you should be able to get it on the internet. I think it's Indian Airwaves Radio. If you type it in, I think you should be able to get it.
Okay, I'll try.
But I just got.
Now this is the mayor of Houston, Texas.
Oh yes.
Okay.
Well, hopefully not for much longer.
Right. Well, maybe CBS will take away his program.
You know, when they say when you hit an African woman, you hit a rock.
You hit a rock.
I don't mean the country. I mean, you know.
You're funny, Shorty. You're almost as funny as the universe stuff. All right, what else you got?
Well, let me see. What else did I want to say? I forgot what I was going to say.
That's it?
So
right.
I'm nappy-headed.
Say what?
I'm nappy-headed.
You're nappy-headed.
Yeah, nappy-headed. Nappy meaning a strong immune system. Headed means going.
Yeah, well, I used to be nappy-headed, but I'd start using straighteners and hair dryers.
Well, you're going to see everybody running today and tomorrow. You know, so.
I hear you, sure.
I have a question for all your listeners. Ask them to type in Barry Seal.
Barry Seal, as in Barry Seal.
And what was in his pocket?
And what was in his pocket?
Mm-hmm. When the coroner. And where was Arlen Specter around the time of Kennedy? And what else? The last thing.
That's enough, Barry. Shorty. That's
hey.
Enough. That's enough. You've given us enough. I think we'll go with all that. All right. Okay, Tim is calling from San Francisco. Hey, Tim, welcome to the program.
How's my bro? How you doing tonight, man?
I'm doing fine, Tim.
That's good, wait, that's good, man. Nice to hear you again, brother. You know, it's funny because, like, I was looking on YouTube last night, and I found a thing where O'Reilly, apparently, before he got to be this right-wing demagogue, right, he was doing, like, documentaries on the death of JFK and stuff like that. He was bringing up, you know, witnesses and stuff about the death of JFK and shit. Or stuff.
Oh, no, don't. You can't. Oops. Okay. All right. Well, we'll talk again, Tim. Y'all have to be careful. You have to be careful. Matthew is calling from Bedford, Texas. Hey, Matthew. Welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike.
How you doing?
I'm doing as well as can be expected, I suppose.
Oh, good.
Don Imus has been kicked by CBS.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You didn't know that.
Yes.
Okay. All right. I didn't know.
No, we got that covered, Matthew. But I hate talking about it anymore. It's like talking about the Israeli-Palestinian issue. It's like talking about racism in America. You can talk and talk and talk, and the same old just keeps chunking along. Let me tell you something. I would not be surprised to see Imus back on the air, somebody's air, within 30 days. I would also not be surprised that all of this discussion stops. And in fact, the real pigs on the airwaves, like Hannity and Limbaugh and who's the guy on CNN Headline News?
Glenn Beck
and the rest of those people, they're just going to ratchet it up to try to prove a point that they can say whatever they damn well please and yada, yada, yada. So, you know, this was a brief interlude, a diversion from death and destruction in the Middle East, a diversion from the fact that within 90 years, half the species on this planet are gone and who cares. A diversion from the fact that the United States Congress would not appropriate a few million dollars to set up a asteroid hitting the Earth detection system. A slight diversion to cover up from the fact that the Taliban are rising again. And after, you see what I'm saying? Hold on, Matthew. I'll be back after the break, and we'll talk about what you wanted to talk about.
Okay. The only one to say, okay.
What?
This.
People reading documents. You're not being denied information you shouldn't see.
Well, we don't want that to happen. All right, back to Matthew. Matthew, are you there? Let's wait till we bring Matthew up here. There you go. Hey, Matthew.
Hey, hello again.
All right, I got it now. Houston Councilman Michael Berry, who also serves as mayor pro tem. Thanks, everybody, sent this to him. Insulted American Indian listeners during his talk show on slavery and Indians on KPRC Radio 950. Here's what he said. Let me just go. I'll give you time to talk, Matthew. I just want people to hear this, all right?
Okay.
Berry said on his program, quote, "If you're against apologizing for slavery, then you got to be against giving welfare to the American Indians because of the fact that 200 years ago they were whipped in a war. And let's just call it what it is. They lost a war. Why don't we go hand the Germans a few million dollars and the Italians and the Japanese? Okay, so we did rebuild their country. We don't continue to give them aid because they sit around whining about a war from 200 years ago. Are you kidding me? Seriously? And what's interesting is, it's one thing when we do stupid things as a government and we oppose it. What's interesting is how many people out there believe that's a good idea. Oh, you got to help the American Indians. What we did was so wrong. What did we do? We conquered them. That's history. Hello? God. All right, that was a few days ago. And then this is out on the national wires. Houston Councilman Michael Berry, who serves as mayor pro tem, now says his radio comments, which insult American Indians, were wrong. Berry says he was re-educated by American Indian responses. Houston natives, however, say they'll wait and see if Berry has had a true change of heart. American Indian responses to his racist radio talk range from, quote, "Sounds like he needs a smallpox-infested blanket," end quote, to a Red Lake, Minnesota reader telling him to, quote, "try talking crazy in Red Lake," and they will send him home with a walleye shoved up his political arse. In his change of heart statement, Berry said he was touched by the response of Indian veterans and now understands the difference between sovereign and welfare nations. Berry said, quote, "I also began learning more about the lives of those who consider themselves Native Americans in modern America. Most don't receive any government assistance of any kind, much less welfare. Almost none of them get any special scholarships from the government for their education. What I believed was governmental assistance and scholarships is, in fact, tribal programs from a sovereign Indian nation. I do have 2 law degrees, but I lacked a good understanding of the constitutional law and Indian treaties and congressional action on the matter. I was simply wrong." Oh, my God. He's got 2 law degrees. Is that right, Matthew?
I think I feel my brain dissolving.
Oh, this is, and if you see his picture on the internet, once again, here's this twitty, wimpy looking little white man who, if you took him out of his fish tank, he would just dissolve into a puddle of pee. So many, and I swear this is true, so many white, male, heterosexual, yes, church-going, homophobic, war-loving, gun-owning, woman-hating, racist little twits. If you take them out of their environment, where that's supported, where they get feedback about their right, and yes, we agree with you, if you put them in any other environment, they collapse. There's nothing there, just a blob of protoplasm. It's unbelievable. And that's not what you called about. So thanks for giving me time to talk, Matthew.
Hey, that's what I call for. Listen, my natural habitat is New England, so this is why I hate Texas. I was born here, but I still hate it and the people in it. So you're preaching to the converted, pal.
You hate Texas?
I do. It's not my fault I was born here, but damn it, I'm going to move from here.
No, that's a good thing. Just wherever your heart takes you, Matthew.
Probably somewhere in Asia. I had a comment and a question. The comment is with this whole email crap.
Right.
The emailer said, nothing really disappears on a computer ever.
Right.
They're acting like a 12-year-old who's been caught looking at pornography.
Right, exactly. Hit the delete key. There, it's all gone.
Yeah, clear history. But listen, and pretty soon, if we can get the right amount of subpoenas,
yeah.
I mean, we're going to be looking at the various child pornography sites that Karl Rove looked at, baby's blood and whatnot. Emails are the least of these people's worries. I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, some very undesirable web browsing has shown up in these twits viewings. But, you know, and this isn't, you know, rant or rave. I mean, I'm dead serious. You look at the track records of half of these politicians, and you'll think, what haven't they looked at?
I know.
But, you know, I mean, that's just the world we live in, where Mark Foley can be the, quote, champion of protecting abused kids, and he himself wanted to abuse them.
Sure.
I mean, this is just the topsy-turvy world, to put it in Gilbert and Sullivan terms.
Oh, yeah. Well, Matthew, you're old, way beyond your years. I don't know if that's a good or a bad thing, but listen, I gotta go.
Oh. Okay, all right. All right,
I'm sorry for taking all your time, but that's just the way it goes in talk radio. Thanks, Matthew. We'll talk again. All right, folks, we'll be back after the break. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. This is the Nova M Radio Network. It's about 7 past the hour. Let's go back to your phone calls. Sarge is calling from Mississippi. Hey, Sarge. Welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing all right. How about you?
Pretty good. I'm going to give you a quiz. I probably already sent you the email telling you the answer. But do you know what happened today, 62 years ago?
62 years ago today. Hold on a minute. That would be 1947.
45.
At 45.
It was the death of Franklin Delano Roosevelt.
Not far from you. I was going to say, and here I am. I'm Warm Springs, Georgia, is right down the road. No, I had no idea.
Yes, 62 years ago today, and in his honor, we King David McKenzie has up at unreportednews.net the hour-long show that he made about the telebroadcast that were made that day and on his funeral as well.
That'll be interesting.
I think everybody will really enjoy it. And a guy, also this week we're running a story on a guy, you've probably heard of Henry Morgan.
Oh, yeah.
So we got some of his broadcast up this week as well, but that's not really what I called about. I wanted to comment on the Iraq bombing. This is a very, very prime example of why this moron in office should have his money taken away. You know, these are not little tin soldiers that you can take to the store and buy new ones. These are actual people whose lives you're affecting.
Right.
I can still have memories of being in the VA and seeing this fella, I can't remember his name, but every time you'd see him, he was hiding behind a planter, or he'd be sitting up at night in his bed sleeping because he never left Vietnam, even though his body did.
Right.
And we're going to have all kinds of this, and it's going to be even worse than what we had in Vietnam. And we forget about Afghanistan.
Right, that's right.
And I just, it's disheartening, and I'm really angry that we aren't stopping this. I know the American people don't support it, but we got to stop this. These are lives, and these are our futures, and it's just aggravating. And okay, if we can't do something about the Katrina thing, let's do something about Iraq. I mean, why we can't do something about Katrina is a mystery. But if people don't care about Katrina, then care about Iraq. But care about something, for God's sake.
I hear you, Sarge.
But I really am upset about McCain. This guy is, in my book, the biggest traitor in American history, bar none, because this man knows he's lying out his teeth to the American people. He's putting a smiley face on something that he knows himself is totally wrong.
Yeah, and you can't, or one can't say that McCain doesn't know the truth. He's not like, say, for example, me. I won't include you because you've been in the military and in a combat zone. But the average American doesn't have a clue as to what it's like in an urban or in any combat zone, much less an urban combat zone. So McCain has been there. McCain was in that hideous Vietnam War, and that adds insult to insult that this son of a bitch would lie to the American public when he knows better. It's not, I mean, that Mike Pence freak that he took from Indiana sounds like just some kind of a halfwit, who I'm sure, or I'm guessing, I'm not sure, but I'm guessing Mike Pence, who said downtown Baghdad was like any market Saturday in Indiana, I'm sure he's never been around a killing zone. He's never been in jungle or urban combat or any kind. So, you can write him off. But McCain, of all people, McCain, to look at that situation and to talk to the soldiers and Marines who will talk to him because he's one of them, to talk to officers because he's one of them, and then to come back or to give his press conference there and lie through his teeth, that's the part, I guess, like you, Sarge, that's the part that just drives me nuts.
That's why I encourage everybody in Phoenix, in Arizona, to go out and sign this recall McCain petition. I've called them, and they were supposed to respond back to me on it, but they haven't. But folks in Phoenix and all the Arizona, state of Arizona, go out and sign that petition. Get this traitor out of the system. When I get to Phoenix, there's one thing I plan to do is if they haven't recalled McCain, I plan to work in that too, because this man is the biggest traitor in American history. He's a blot on the great state of Arizona. He's a blot on the United States. this man needs to go.
I hear you. All right.
Okay, thank you.
All right, Sarge. Take care. Take it easy. All right. You know, I think one of the reasons that, and this is just a guess, that so many of the veterans who will be coming back from this Iraq war occupation are and will be so traumatized is because of the nature of the fighting. It's like the Israeli soldiers who do not want to be in the occupied territories. They don't. If you follow the Israeli press or the Israeli peace groups, you will know that literally scores, if not hundreds, of Israeli soldiers, there's a whole movement. They refuse duty. They utterly refuse to go into the occupied territories because they're people of honor. The American soldiers who are being forced into this situation, it's a bit different between the difference between Israeli soldiers and American soldiers. In the first place, every single Israeli has to enter the military at a certain age. But in this country, obviously, that's not the case. But the soldiers and Marines coming back, our people who are going to be coming back from Iraq, are going to be coming back with the sort of war and occupation memories that, I mean, none of them are good, I'm sure, but are especially hideous and horrendous because it's urban warfare. They're going to come back with the memories of smashing into people's houses who have done nothing except be there, of having to rough up parents in front of their children, screaming, "Kids, don't hurt my daddy, don't hurt my mommy." You don't have to understand Arabic to understand that when a 7-year-old or a 10-year-old or a 12-year-old is standing there in utter absolute horror as some great big foreign soldier is pushing daddy around or shoving mommy to the floor. And these soldiers and Marines, you know, they're human, and they've got that in their heads. And the times they have to open fire, it's like Vietnam, from what I've been told, in that regard, where every single person in Vietnam was a potential VC or terrorist or bomber, whatever they were called back then. And this is drummed into the American soldiers. And it was probably not a terrorist, but these were people who wanted the American military the hell out of their country. And eventually we left after participated in the murder of 2 million of them and 58,000 of us. This is crazy. It's just crazy. So these soldiers coming back from Iraq, this is a whole different situation. These people are being perverted beyond belief. These young guys and the older guys, the ones in the reserve and the National Guard, the guys in their 30s and 40s who have families back here, who understand the sanctity of your home, who understand how precious your children are, who understand, you know, these are not single guys, 18 or 19, who couldn't care less about raising hell and kicking ass and you know, filling somebody full of bullet holes. Let's face it, that's why the military is based on young people. You can take young men and turn them into killers in the space of 3 months. You know that. I know that. The military knows that. Everybody knows that. But a 35 or 40-year-old man who's got a spouse and children and bills and maybe a business or a job back home, and he's told to go over there and smash into somebody's house and rough people up and rip their house apart looking for what? For equipment used to make improvised explosive devices. Jesus Christ, what are we doing?
Over soon. Take a deep breath. Find your happy place. It's more of Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. Everything is jibbity-jibbity tonight. Just, I don't know what it is. Just too much weirdness. Too much weirdness. I think part of it was finding out today that, or finding out last night, it really didn't sink in until today, that Kurt Vonnegut has died. I don't know why that is upsetting. I really don't. I never met the man. I'd heard him on TV a couple of times or heard audio interviews with him or what have you. But it was his books that had such an effect on me. I used to tell Kathy that after I read Slaughterhouse-Five, and then a decade and a half later went to see the movie, I said, my God, I know what it's like to be adrift in time like that. And Kathy looked at me and said, what do you mean? I said, well, I can't explain it, but to be unhinged in time is, I don't know. If you've been there, you know what I'm talking about. Time to me has never been all that concrete. I know for a lot of people that this sounds like a horrible contradiction in terms or an impossibility, but yeah, I assume you know what I'm talking about. I'm just talking gibberish here because the whole thing, my mind is like mush tonight. But being adrift, where you just slide back and forth and back and forth from the past, the present, the future, some fantastic future with... On Tralfamador with Wild Hack. What was her first name? Huh? Montana Wild Hack, right. What did Billy Pilgrim say? Could we have the cover now? Are you going to mate? maybe that's it. I don't know. Do you feel out of sorts? It's just a combination of everything, right? I think starting out this morning, finding out that a suicide bomber. See, we don't do suicide bombers because it's not our country that's been invaded. But if our country had been invaded and occupied by a force that was just going to kill us all in order to steal everything we have, we would probably do suicide bombs too. You know what I'm saying? But you can't, it is impossible to defeat a force like that. It can't be done unless you kill every single Iraqi and then say, okay, let's make some pretend Iraqis now. It can't be done. It couldn't be done in Vietnam. It can't be done here. And it will not be done in the occupied territories in Palestine, Israel. It won't be done. It takes talking and negotiations and working things out and peace and mutual respect. And I guess waking up this morning and hearing that and going, oh, my God, in the middle of the green zone. And then reflecting on what McCain and these other freaks said, oh, yeah, well, it's safe here. Everything's going fine. And then listening to this bastard Bush today with his official statement, we stand with the Iraqi government. You don't stand with anything except the oil companies, you filthy thief. And then, to be reminded, that Vonnegut is dead. And I walk every day just a little over 4 miles. And I do it in about, I don't push it, but I do it in about 55 minutes. And it's usually the same trail. And frankly, it gets a little boring after a while. So I would think about Kurt Vonnegut and Slaughterhouse-Five and warping time, just moving sideways in time, and figured out a way to do that. I can start the walk, and I think, oh, my God, it's 2 miles out and 2 miles back. Ah, it's so boring. So I don't know what it is I do, but it's something that I must have learned from reading Slaughterhouse-Five. but I'll do something that compresses or eliminates time, and all of a sudden I'm on my way back, and I think, now how in the hell did that happen? That's pretty cool. I don't remember the first 2 miles. It's what? Oh, that's the beginning stages of Alzheimer's. Is that what that is, Kathy? Oh, okay. I thought I was just slip sliding through time. Your phone calls when we come back. I'm just rambling and being self-indulgent. My bad. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Your Day Screaming with Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio.
Now I'm a 26 before the hour. Back to your phone calls after that little interlude of Malloy nervous breakdown. Melvin is calling from Miami, Florida. Hey, Melvin.
How you doing, Mike?
I'm all right.
Okay, I just had a statement to make and a question.
Okay. You're not under oath, you know.
No. the statement about the thing Ima said, these rappers have mothers, daughters, and sisters. They don't speak to them the way they come across in their rap.
Right.
So he shouldn't, what he did was personalize it. He stated the Rutgers, the Rutgers basketball team.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what a lot of people are upset about.
Right.
And second, has anyone did a study on the loss of manufacturing jobs in America?
And what? Sure. Oh, yeah. There have been several done, and it's horrifying.
No, because if you look at the places where they had the steel, the cars in Detroit, I was wondering what the enlistment rate was in those areas, because you might see that a lot of people have to go into the military just to make it.
Oh, sure. There's story after story in mainstream media, in like New York Times, Washington Post, Newsweek magazine, Ebony, story after story of people, black and white, young, for the most part, young males, but to a lesser degree, young females. They don't have the money to go to college, because even what used to be cheap, and that was state universities, are now almost priced out of range of people, especially if you come from a family where there are three or four kids and you've got them all coming up and you're trying to get by. You and your spouse, are maybe between the two of you, are making 50 grand a year or 60 grand a year. That's nothing if you have four children who want to go to school, even to a public state university. So, you know, the military steps up with these bogus offers. They don't say, hi, we're looking for people to go kill and blow stuff up, which is what the military, that's it. That's the sole function of the military. The military is not there to bring democracy or help people along or build bridges and dams. The military there is to kill people and blow things up, period. But they don't tell them that. They say, oh, yeah, well, come on, here's $15,000 bonus. You know, to some white kid from Appalachia or some black kid from South Central, 15 grand? Holy jumping Jehoshaphat. I mean, that's like, I get that just for joining the military? Boom, there they go. Boom, here they come in a coffin. So, absolutely. It sucks. I swear either one or two things, in my opinion, as useless as it is, one or two things has to happen, Melvin. Either we have got to get beyond the point where we use war as a means of settling issues, or we've got to have a universal draft where every man and woman, when they hit 18 in this country, goes into the service. That's all. There's no halfway ground about that.
Okay, and another thing about the Red Dawn. You remember that movie?
Oh, yeah.
That was a perfect analogy to what you were saying about if someone invaded your country, what would you do?
Oh, man, what would I do? I know what I'd be doing. I don't know. that I would be a suicide bomber. But I'll tell you what, I'd be trying to kill more of the sons of bitches than I could possibly, as many as I could get. I mean, it's one thing to not go invade somebody else's home, but pity the bastard that comes to mind. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes, sir.
And especially if you have children, and if you have dreams, and if you've tried to, you know, you buy a house, or you put in a garden, or you have a 5-year-old, and all of a sudden some evil son of a bitch, 6'6", dressed up like a military and carrying weapons and grenades and guns and slamming you up against a wall and embarrassing you and that's not going to happen to me. It just won't. And it wouldn't happen to you. And it wouldn't happen to most Americans. We will fight until the last one of us is dead. So why in the hell are we surprised about the Iraqis? These are not terrorists. These are not insurgents. These are people saying, get the hell out of my country. Get out of my country. And it's just, I don't know, Melvin, it drives me insane. It drives me almost nuts.
Yeah. And I got scared for a minute. When you left America, I thought I lost you.
Nuh-uh.
Because you get me by work. Listening to you brings some sanity to me in this crazy world. You know, I have to work 3 jobs just to make a living.
I hear
my wife and my 3 kids. So
I hear you.
You are a breath of fresh air, Mike.
Thanks. Thanks, Melvin. I appreciate
all
it.
Right.
Take care.
Have a nice one.
All right. Take care. Take care. Take care. What do we do when we're not working in radio? Draw unemployment checks.
Get some sleep.
Telemarketing. Well, you can
sleep.
Always you can always go, you know, do your nursing thing almost.
Or sleep.
But no, I'm listening to Melvin talk about 3 jobs, you know. Right now I don't have to work 3 jobs. There have been times. But you know, last August when we had our butts handed to us by those freaks at Air America. We're looking at each other like, uh-oh, here we go again. I don't mind being on unemployment. I mean, I do, because I know, you know, with what little money we have saved and unemployment, you know, we'll be all right for 6 months, 7 months. But it's those damn meetings you have to go to, those career meetings, you know.
That's what I was going to say. That is some of the funniest things that have happened to me, though, in the last, I don't know, 5 years have happened in unemployment meetings. I like the time that we were fired when I was six months pregnant, and I'm sitting in there just so
big
pregnant.
Big as a house.
And all these, you know, the mediator's standing up there saying, okay, I'm passing out sheets of paper. I want you to write the top 5 reasons you think employers aren't hiring you when you're going. This is like my 4th meeting. Like, what are you doing wrong? And I'm like, well, let me think. Let's see, my ankles are swollen.
I have to pee every 10 minutes.
I'm having a baby, and maybe they don't want to put me on maternity leave, like, I don't know, the week they hire me.
But, you know,
we
put up with the humiliation because it was $300 a week apiece. I mean, you know.
Hey, it was $320 a week when we got fired the second time.
That's right, that's right.
Well, the first time, in our defense, we weren't actually fired. The company just dissolved.
Disappeared, right, i.e. America.
Nothing left.
But, no, it's not the, you know, it's just going in there to those damn meetings. I had to fill out one of those forms, you know, about what kind of a job I was looking for. And because I'm a smartass, I wrote down chemical engineer. You know, I didn't put down radio talk show host, I put down chemical engineer. And sure enough, about 3 weeks into drawing unemployment, I got a phone call from one of the counselors at Georgia Department of Labor. We have an opening for you. We want you to go to this interview. And I'm like, oh, no, chemical engineer. Anyway, Melvin, hang in there. All right. Hang in there, Melvin. 3 jobs. I hear you. I hear you.
I think Bush would say, isn't that fabulous? That's just uniquely American.
That's right. Melvin is a real American because Melvin is out there pursuing the American dream. And if for whatever reason he can't make it on 1 job and he can't make it on 2 jobs, then he'll take 3. And if he's married, maybe his wife can hold 2. And if he's got a couple of teenagers, maybe they can get 1 each or 2. Damn right! This is America! John is calling from Sacramento. Hey, John.
Hello there.
Yeah, get me off the speakerphone.
I'm on Skype, man.
You're what?
On Skype.
I don't know what that is.
Anyhow, the other day something dawned on me, and I was thinking that these so-called administrations.
All right, listen, I'm going to have to put you on hold, John, and figure out it. You're going to have to figure out a different way to call the program. We just can't do it with whatever you're talking to us on, whether it's speakerphone or cheesy cell phone. Can't do it. Sorry, John. Robert is calling from San Francisco. Hey, Robert. Robert.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Great, great. You know, Shorty was referring to the Bush crime family, and she was dropping these clues. You ought to have a call-in evening where we just get into trivia about the Bush crime family. Barry Seal, a book was written by Danny Hopsicker called
right.
Barry and the Boys.
Right.
And Barry Seal was an air cadet with Lee Harvey Oswald. Well, he was a big pilot. He one of the biggest importers of drugs the United States has ever known, apparently.
Yeah, he worked for Ollie North, didn't he?
Yeah, yeah. And George W. Bush was flying one of his private, one of Barry's very planes that Barry really liked. Anyway, Barry died in a hail of gunfire on a courthouse steps somewhere in the South. And in his pocket, as Shorty was referring, was a black address book with the personal home phone number of one George Herbert Walker Bush, former CIA director and
vice president. Well, that was Eugene Hassan. Yeah, right, Eugene Hassanfuss. Hassanfuss was shot down over Nicaragua by
Barry Seal was involved in a court case. You know, loose lips sink ships.
Right.
So Barry went down in a hail of gunfire in the United States. And it's an amazing story if you get to read Barry and the Boys by Danny Hopsicker. He was at our 9/11 thing a few years ago in the Herbst Theater in San Francisco, and he wrote Terrorland, which goes into the hijackers and how they were trained at military bases in the South, in Florida.
All right, hey, Robert, I'm afraid we're out of time. Thanks for checking in, pal. We'll talk again. Take care. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy. Eventually. Was it John who called in on the Skype? Jason writes in, get with the times, Mike, and sends me the web address, skype.com. I have no idea. I don't know what any of this stuff is. It's an internet phone service. $29.95 a year and then unlimited calls. And, I have no idea about this stuff. I still believe that you can call the phone company and say, my phone's not working. Will you fix it? Isn't that funny? So anyway, I'm sorry, Skype caller. I'm sorry. It just I guess it's just not too compatible with our equipment here at the Atlanta branch of Nova M Radio. Skype. Get with the times, Mike. Yeah. Well, what do I know? Phone service should be free anyway, shouldn't it? Thanks to Ian Huff, who engineered the program tonight and answered your phone calls. Also, Chris in Minnesota, our senior correspondent, Mark Marshall, our webmaster, the moderators at MikeMalloy.com at the message board. And don't forget, this Sunday, I've had to change my flight because I was going to come in Saturday night, and I'm going to come in Saturday morning because of the horrendous storms that are going to exist between here and here in Phoenix. God, I hate flying in the spring, in the summer, in the fall, in the winter. Oh, well. So April 15th, come on by, and what tickets, $10, woo, or two for what, $12.48, $12.84, $14.80, I see, just like I get KPHX, $14.80. You'll meet Jeff Farias and Ian and Bill Press and Stephanie Miller and Tom Hartman and moi, and I don't know who else would be there. You might meet your soulmate. Who knows? So get your ticket. And Suzanne in L.A. Well, Mike, it came pretty close. Before you go off there, we're at 69,996 at thedraftgore.com. We need four more. Come on. Make it 70,000. Suzanne writes, special mention to Arnold for his kind personal comment to me. All right. And from Gordon in Oklahoma City, Gordon writes, Mike, I hope you like this quote I received from the American Humanist Association earlier today. Kurt Vonnegut said, I am a humanist, which means in part that I've tried to behave decently without expectations of rewards or punishments after I am dead. Vonnegut was honorary president of the American Humanist Association and will be missed. And I want to say this one more time. We did this in the first few minutes of the program, I believe. Kurt Vonnegut's Requiem from his last novel, 2 years ago, it was published, A Man Without a Country. And it's very quick. Requiem. A crucified planet Earth, should it find a voice and a sense of irony, might now well say of our abuse of it, forgive them, Father, they know not what they do. The irony would be that we know what we are doing. When the last living thing has died on account of us, how poetical it would be if Earth could say, in a voice floating up perhaps from the floor of the Grand Canyon, it is done. People did not like it here. Ouch. All right. Let me see. Ramona is calling from Hammond, Indiana. Ramona, hi.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm good. That was powerful stuff that you just read. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, really.
I was calling because my son's on the second tour of Iraq, and we just met Cindy Sheehan yesterday.
You did?
Yes, at a seminar in Gary, Indiana.
Quite a woman.
Oh, she's remarkable. And my granddaughter, my son's daughter, had the honor of giving her a peace pipe.
Wow.
Yeah, that was really, really very special for us.
And where's your son?
He's in Iraq. He's in Baghdad. And he was home in February for a little R&R. And as much as you love to see your child come home, it's hard to let them go back.
Yeah.
And what Cindy was saying, you know, at the seminar was how much this war not only affects the soldiers, but it affects the family members. And let me tell you, this little girl has had nightmares. She hollers out in her sleep. She stays, you know, on the weekends with us. Uh-huh. And it's heartbreaking. And when her father had to leave in February to go back to Iraq, she was okay until he was walking out the door, and then she grabbed him and was holding him, screaming, Daddy, Daddy, please don't go. Please don't go, Daddy.
Oh, Jesus. How old is she?
She's 10. And that just killed me. That just broke my heart.
What's your son's name?
My son's name is Gerald.
Gerald?
Mm-hmm.
G-E-R-A-L-D?
G-R-A-L-D.
Okay.
And they had a couple of Iraqi veterans there that were talking about their experiences and how they'll never get over it. And one of them said that he went there after Bush declared mission accomplished.
Yeah.
Thinking that he was going to give aid to the people of Iraq. And what he did, he gave them, he was in charge of shipping SUVs and air conditioners.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Well, that's one reason to put somebody in utter harm's way. Ramona, thanks for checking in. Our best to your son, okay?
Oh, thank you. I'll be calling back.
All right. Take care. We'll talk again. Take care. Oy. Strange day. I don't know why. Strange day. I'll see you tomorrow night, Truth Seeker. Take care, okay? Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is the Nova M Radio Network.